Thank you guys for tuning into the first installment of Dr. B's Walking Thoughts with Dr. Bo and Dr. Brennan. Dr. Brennan, how are you doing today?
Great day today. That walk was a little hot today, so we found all the shade.
Yeah, we found our shade path. It's getting hot in Texas now. What is it, 102?
Felt like at least that.
Yeah. And we just did our retreat down to the river, and it was like 102, 103 on the river while we were down there.
Didn't notice it then.
Yeah, because you got in that ice water. So we wanted to start the first episode with something that is a topic that we talk about a lot in the facility, and it's surgery prevention. And that can be a hot topic for people, saying that you can't say that, can't do that. I openly speak that I do that for people because I try that, and Dr. Brennan does as well. So Doc, let's talk about how we even look at a patient whenever we decide that surgery prevention is possible.
So first, we got to make sure that they still have enough integrity left to the structures, whatever structures it is involved, that we know that we can help them re-strengthen this area, calm the area down if it's tendonitis or maybe even a joint inflammation. So first, we got to make sure that the joints or structures are intact enough to the point where we know that they can rehab through it. But oftentimes, if they're walking into our office, it most likely can be rehabbed.
Yeah, and I've definitely, we've had some, of course, right? We can't do it for everybody, and it has to be a big part of that person's process. And I've had people work really, really hard and still need to do a surgery, but we talk about that. But you're right, like if they're walking in, generally, if they want to strengthen that and they want to be able to utilize that functionally in the future, and if they're working on that, there is a chance, as long as it's not completely lacking ligamentous stability or anything like that, that's no longer able to stabilize his normal joint motion.
Exactly. I completely agree.
So I guess we have a patient walk in the door and they say, hey, I have this torn meniscus. I mean, I'm pretty quick to say, let's get to work on it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, especially something like a meniscus. Meniscus is something that even if you didn't play sports as a child, if you were just a child, like a normal child that played outside and things.
I wasn't a normal child.
Whenever you get older, if you do some type of imaging of your knee, you'll probably see some type of meniscus tear. The question is that truly something that's new, or have you been actually living with that already for 5 years and now you just irritated your knee?
Yeah, exactly. It was just like, is there an MOI, something that happened right then that created that injury to where it's a freshly torn meniscus? And generally, I don't even know that surgery is the process for that anyway, because I was someone who had a torn meniscus and did not take that process. But it all depends on the person. The type of tear matters in that situation also. But if they're not having a catch as they've been in their knee, where it's not a pain catch, but an actual physical catch, then we don't think that meniscus is hooked and they continue normal range of motion, then we can work with that, I would say.
Agreed, most definitely.
So let's say it's a hot meniscus walking in the door. Let's say a 50% tear of the medial meniscus on the left leg. What are your thoughts?
Well, we already know that they have some common issues that we can typically look out, but as you already know, we always are going to analyze them, use the 3D motion capture camera, and figure out for sure where the motion breakdown is at. But getting them, I'm sure, on some type of foam rolling protocol is going to be a piece of their rehab. Getting them on some strengthening, most likely of their glutes and hip stabilizing muscles. And then after that, beginning to correct those movement patterns, because the reason they injured that meniscus is the main thing that we need to correct. So if we correct that movement pattern with different rehab and cueing and helping them understand proper movement, a lot of that pain and sensitivity is going to go away pretty quickly.
And the MLS laser helps a lot too. Definitely on the meniscus. That will pull that inflammation out. So then it's like applying what therapies are you going to apply with it to help reduce inflammation while you correct the movement pattern and while you help the joint function as properly as normal. Because again, joint motion is what's necessary. That's going to pump in nutrients and pump out waste. That's how you heal. So we need to get it moving properly as much as you can. So necessary rehab. And definitely on the movement screen, it's nice because it does show how the body adapts throughout, like where the greatest weakness from the tear is, because it can show like anterior hip rotation with an opposite shoulder posterior rotation. And you see things like that showing up, and it kind of gives you an idea of where the weight has moved away from, and you start to just strengthen it back into the position it was in and help it get there with less inflammation so it doesn't hurt, But, I mean, generally, the meniscus, it does still takes a couple months to get it moving and feeling better anyway, I'd say.
Well, and that's why we got the laser to help speed it up.
That's right. So, that's meniscus specific. So, a patient comes in. They come see me. I do a movement analysis, a gait analysis, and I talk to them about their movement patterns, and I'm working on it. And they have a partial tear, maybe even a complete tear of a ligament in the ankle. And my first thing is like, look, you need to get stronger, and you need to stabilize this leg while you work on the patterns and then while you rehab the ankle itself. So yeah, I'm probably going to give you rehab for what damage was done in the joint today, and you need to do your rehab every day. And then you're going to see Dr. Brennan, and Dr. Brennan's going to take you through a strength. So say we do that, what does it look like then? What happens when that patient leaves my office and walks out to that rehab area with you?
Well, obviously we're doing a lot more than just putting the band around their ankle and making them go three different directions. Those are great, then they got to start with that, but they've already done that. We're right past that. So we're going to more advanced stuff, kind of similar to some of the like Achilles rehab that I was doing today with another patient for our rehab session. But challenging that ankle in different ways. So we did some hanging foot squats and deadlifts. So if you don't know what that is, the front of your foot is on a small elevation, like a half inch. A book works great, but we used a plate on both feet. And then you don't let your heel elevate up or down, and you go through the squat and the deadlift. And it's to teach you how to hold tightness in that foot and also to control that ankle joint. So stuff like that would be great examples of how we get more functional and more challenging with their rehab.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that making people do more dynamic things and more aggressive movements as they can is just going to help them adapt more and more. And they just have to do it in a safe, positive way and make sure that they know what they're doing, which is why they go work with you on it. So surgery prevention is completely possible for people. The biggest example I can give is I had an 11-year-old athlete that came in, was on the schedule for a knee surgery in 1 week. And he came in for one treatment and did his rehab, and all the pain was gone, and he still has his control issue that he's working on because I saw him one visit. He didn't rehab it yet. On the second visit, he came in, he still had no pain, and then I saw him 3 months later, and he still didn't have anything. So my point is that kid did not need to have a knee surgery at 11 years old, and he was on the schedule for one.
Yeah, it's pretty sad to see. We see it a lot with our older patients as well, because as we talked about early, sometimes that meniscus tear has been there for a long time and then you just injure it. So then they do surgery on it and your pain's still there and nothing's changed. And so, yeah, it's even worse to see with young kids. So it's sad.
Yeah. It's, for me, it's like, you know, that it's going to change movement patterns and change tissues and change things. And as they grow and adapt, like, what is that going to grow into? You can't tell me that because you got to wait to see what it is. And that's just going to make things more difficult and harder in the future versus like, hey, let's teach this kid how to move right. I mean, nobody else is teaching them how to move right, and that's why his knee hurts whenever he jumps in volleyball every time.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious whenever he got better in 1 to 2 visits that no surgery is needed. I mean, on the flip side of that coin, we can talk about a patient that at one point started with me. She had a lot of foot and ankle pain, and I thought the issue was an arch instability issue, and after going through treatments and getting her a decent way through rehab, the issue was starting to resolve, but just didn't want to actually make a whole lot of progress. We made some progress, but not enough. And so I referred her over to you, and you actually noticed how that talo curl joint was completely...
Oh, that posterior slide.
Yeah, had that posterior slide. And that would be something, if an ortho saw that, that would be surgery.
For sure.
That was like ankle instability. That was for sure a surgical case.
Chronic pain increasing, going on for a while. You look at one side compared to the other, they're completely different.
Complete sliding of the joint.
It's wild slide.
A full centimeter, maybe even two.
It was far. You could see the Achilles push back through whenever it slid. So it was already making soft tissue contact with the movement.
And that did, on the opposite side of the scale, take a lot more treatment, a lot more rehab, a lot more dedication on her part. But she's now walking and doing the things she
wanted.
Hiking,
doing stuff like that. It was cool. And like the crazy part with it is that posterior slide, she just needed to strengthen a specific way and stay away from other movements because she couldn't stabilize the joint because she kept hitting it with little movements. So as soon as she dropped the excessive, the ones that just, hey, just stay away from this for right now, and then strengthen this up, then all of a sudden the ankle started to solidify. Then it was a neoprene slip that helped her. We did some K-tape after that, and then pretty much it faded out. But that was only a couple of months still, though. Like, when we talk long-term, there's people working on stuff for years. And she was only, 2 to 3 months on that? I mean, her pain was down by that point, for sure. It was just like, hey, it's not fully stabilized yet. Like, the cause of these problems take a lot longer than the symptoms sometimes, or a lot of times. And I think that's a hard thing for people. So I posted about the lumbar spine instability, and she thought she was good because she had no pain left, and she was doing everything. I always tell people, like, hey, you got to keep working on this. And then she went hiking and rowing and did these things and hurt her back. And she went and got images done because she knew that was it. That was done. But it was like 1 to 2 treatments later and she was like back out of pain and she wasn't worried anymore. But my point is that like the lumbar spine isn't going to stabilize overnight. That's not going to stabilize in 2 months. Generally, like it takes a long time to stabilize a joint segments. They have to stabilize together. And every movement you put into them creates more movement, and you're trying to lessen that sometimes. It's interesting because you hear about mobility all the time. It's like mobility, 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 mobility. And it's like, well, stability, you know. I think it's more about stable motion. You got to be stable when you move. You got to do both. Can't be one or the other.
Got to have control.
Hypermobility is a problem. We have multiple patients that see us because of hypermobility over and over again because the general pathways of mobility aren't helping them.
Agreed.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in to Dr. B's Walk and Thoughts.
Walk and Talking Thoughts.
The name's just going to get longer as we go, every episode. Thanks, guys.